In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
This is what democracy looks like.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another day in the resistance. I hope everyone got a chance to catch their breath over the weekend. The movement continues as 45, President Bannon, and the GOP continue their assault on this country and her people. We are on the verge of accidental wars led by cruelty and disregard, while witnessing the rise of the people in heroic measure. 45 puts the country to shame, while protest and civic action continue with passionate, dedicated fervor. Rights are being stripped, systems are breaking down, protections against corruption and for the environment are being dissolved, and threats are proving to be promises. In the face of impossible odds, the people are on their feet, fighting for the soul of their homeland in awe-inspiring numbers. The everyday person is staring down power armed with nothing but a petition and a sign, and for me at least, the passion to restore the promise of the country is electric. Hello, I'm Kelly the Voice. Thank you for listening to K-Voice, a voice of resistance. Every day you feel discouraged and you feel like dropping out, take a breath. Remind yourself of what you are fighting for and what you refuse to lose. Then stay for one more day. Just one more. And if tomorrow saps your spirit, do it all over again. We need every woman and every man in this fight. There are no back seats anymore. No one can help us now. The Democrats in office are toothless. Regardless of their desire to stem the tide, they have no power to do so, and the Republicans are stripping them of what little power the system allowed them.
Change will not come if we wait for some other person or some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We are the change that we seek.
President Barack Obama. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction, and the election of 45 to the most powerful position in the world is an action that has disrupted the world order. In answer, more of us took to the streets than ever had in a worldwide protest of celebration and solidarity. They say, no government can survive if 5% of the population is mobilized against it. But recent research shows that an estimated 3.5% of the population engaged in sustained, participatory, peaceful resistance is enough. That is 11 million people. 11 million U.S. citizens in the resistance have the power to change the government into one that'll work for us, that will fight for equality in all forms, that will put people above money, that will hold itself to ethical standards, that will reject hypocrisy in all forms, that will respect the earth and fight vigorously to protect it, and so on. But most importantly, a government that is not the powers that be that we know as we know it. I tell myself every day that I am the majority. Those who don't support the administration are the majority. 63 million people voted for Trump. 250 million adults did not vote for Trump. And 73.5 million voted against Trump. We are the majority. Howard Dean made the point that in a state legislature, in a week if they received 6 to 10 phone calls on any issue. Need for a busy week. So let's keep calling. Let's keep writing. Let's keep showing up. We are the majority, and we sure as hell are not the silent majority.
I'm a nasty woman. Not as nasty as a man who looks like he bathes in Cheeto dust. Not as nasty as a man who was a diss track to America. From back to broken back, he stomped on. His words are just white noise ruining this national anthem. I'm not as nasty as Confederate flags being tattooed across my city. Maybe the South actually is going to rise again. Or maybe it never really fell. Because we're still drowning in vanilla-coated power. Slavery has just been reinterpreted into the prison system. Blacks are still in shackles and graves just for being black in front of people who see melanin as animal skin. Tell me of a decade that didn't have traces of white hoods burning up our faith in humanity. I'm not as nasty as a swastika painted on a pride flag. And I didn't know that devils could be resurrected, but I feel Hitler in these streets. A mustache traded in for a toupee. The Nazis renamed the cabinets. Electroconversion therapy, the new gas chamber. Shaming the gay out of America. Turning rainbows into suicide notes. I'm not as nasty as racism, a fraud, a homophobia, or lies, or transphobia, sexual assault, white supremacy, white privilege, ignorance, or misogyny. Not as nasty as treating girls like Pokemon before their bodies have even evolved. Not as nasty as your own daughter being your favorite sex symbol, like wet dreams infused with your own genes. But yet, I'm a nasty woman. Funky, bitchy, loud, nasty woman. Not as nasty as the combo of Trump and Pence being served as an option in my voting booth, but I'm nasty like the battles women fought to get me in that voting booth. Nasty like the fight to close the wage gap. Nasty like conversations trying to convince people there is such thing as a wage gap. Remind me, this is only because women usually go into lower paying fields. So why did last year's top actresses make less than half of what the top actors did? Do you realize that the World Cup shelf of the U.S. men's soccer team is as empty as Trump's promises, but the women's team has scored 3 World Cups? Last year, adding $20 million more dollars in revenue than the men's team, but is still paid 75% less. See, even when women go into high-paying careers, their wages are still cut with blades sharpened by testosterone. Tell me why the work of a black woman and a Hispanic woman is only worth 63 and 54% of a white man's paycheck. This is not just a feminist myth. This is inequality. So we are not here to be debunked. We are here to be respected. We are here to be nasty, like bloodstained bed sheets. In case you forgot, women can't choose when or if they get their periods. Trust me, if we could, we would. We don't like having to throw away our favorite pairs of underwear. But last time I checked, men can choose to not have sex, and they know how to live without a full head of hair. So tell me, why are tampons and pads still taxed, but Viagra and Rogaine change I have yet to feel in this country. So don't try to justify our injustices with excuses that smell like your security when you're walking alone to your bathroom or the car and down the street. Securities my eyes have yet to see. They're too busy praying to my feet so you don't mistake eye contact for wanting physical contact. I've been zipping up my smile so you don't think I want to unzip your jeans. I know you forget to examine the reflection of your own privilege, or you may be afraid of the truth, but I'm not afraid to be honest. I'm not afraid to be nasty. Yeah, I'm nasty, like the struggle of women still beating equality into the world because our rights have been beaten out of us for too long. But this fight will continue to embody this nastiness. I'm nasty like red, white, and blue bruises. Nasty like Elizabeth, Amelia, Rosa, Condoleezza, Sonia, Malala, Michelle, our mothers, our sisters, us. Sisters are all nasty, like history, and our pussies ain't for grabbing. They're for reminding you that our walls are stronger than America's ever will be. They're for birthing new generations of filthy, vulgar, bossy, brave, proud, nasty woman. So if you a nasty woman, say hell yeah.
I'm a Nasty Woman by 19-year-old Nina Donovan. Last week, the GOP made it so mining companies can legally dump toxic waste into our streams and rivers. They made it so oil companies don't have to reveal the bribes they get from foreign companies. And they also said that the severely mentally impaired who cannot even get a driver's license can now buy a gun. Trump promised to blow a hole through the wall of church and state. And now we have a nominee for the Supreme Court who is championed by the far right. Neil Gorsuch, who voted against reproductive rights in the Hobby Lobby case, wrote a book that smacked of opposition to the woman's right to choose by saying, in regards to assisted suicide, human life is fundamentally and inherently valuable. The intentional taking of a human life by a private person is always wrong. Gorsuch also supported the cutting off of Planned Parenthood's funding in a case. If his positions on a woman's sovereignty over her own body are not enough for liberal-minded people to reject, then the fact that his hero is Antonin Scalia should be enough. And frankly, regardless of any of that, he is slithering into a stolen seat. Our President Barack Obama chose a moderate, well-liked Merrick Garland for the seat, and Republicans refused to even consider him for a year in an unprecedented move of piggish anti-American, anti-democratic obstructionism. And I say we push our Democratic representatives to show Gorsuch the same consideration and respect that the GOP showed Merrick Garland. There are five basic steps to get Supreme Court justice confirmed. You can plan your means of resistance accordingly. Regardless of how rapidly Republicans want to wrap up the process, there are a few steps that must occur at the minimum before any Supreme Court nomination is confirmed. These steps could take at least a couple of months. First, after Trump names his choice, the nomination is referred to the Senate Judiciary Committee. The committee has 20 members. There are 11 Republicans and 9 Democrats. Because it takes a bare majority of committee members to approve the Supreme Court nominee for a full Senate vote, Democrats lack the votes to block the Trump's nominee at the committee level. So don't get too upset when this happens. Then there's pre-hearing research. And that is where Grassley and Dianne Feinstein, the ranking members, pore over the nominee's past speeches, public statements, press clippings, writings, and if the nominee is a judge, judicial opinions. So, and then there's a confirmation hearing. The hearing can take several days, with at least a couple days for the Judiciary Committee members to directly question the nominee. After the proceedings, senators may submit further questions in writing for the nominee to respond to. And then committee vote. The committee votes on whether to approve the nominee and then reports its recommendation to the full Senate. And then the Senate vote. This is where we have some power. Full Senate vote is where things could get dicey for Republicans, because the Democrats can force Republicans to gather 60 votes in the Senate before the nominee is confirmed. There are 52 Republicans in the Senate. That means Democrats can effectively block or filibuster the nomination if fewer than 8 Democrats support Trump's pick for the high court. The goal here is to give our Democratic representatives the courage to filibuster. And yes, the Republicans will probably then get rid of the filibuster and force him through. That is to be expected. Recognize, everything from here on out is on the GOP and they know it. Our trick is to make things take as long as possible and as difficult as possible to minimize the damage. If you feel lost as to how to join the resistance or participate effectively and have not checked out the Indivisible Guide, I suggest you do it as soon as possible. Even if you think you know what you're doing, check out the Indivisible Guide. It's excellent. You can find it at www.indivisible.com. After going to the website, you can download Indivisible, a practical guide for resisting the Trump agenda. The people who put the guide together are former congressional staffers who witnessed the rise of the Tea Party. They saw the activists, the Tea Party, take on a popular president with a mandate for change and a supermajority in Congress. They saw them organize locally and convince their own members of Congress to reject President Obama's agenda. Their ideas were wrong, cruel, and tinged with racism. And they won. The guide says, "We believe that the next 4 years depend on Americans across the country standing indivisible against the Trump agenda. We believe that buying into false promises or accepting partial concessions will only further empower Trump to victimize us and our neighbors. We hope that this guide will provide those who share that belief useful tools to make Congress listen." The guide says, "Like us, you probably deeply disagree with the principles and positions of the Tea Party. But we can all learn from their successes and influencing the national debate and the behavior of the national policymakers." The Tea Party's successes came down to 2 critical strategic elements. They were locally focused. The Tea Party started as an organic movement built on small local groups of dedicated conservatives. Yes. They received some support and coordination from above, but fundamentally, all the hubbub was caused by a few relatively small number of conservatives working together. The group started as disaffected conservatives talking to each other online in response to the 2008 bank bailouts and President Obama's election. Groups began forming to discuss their anger and what should be done. They eventually realized the locally based discussion groups themselves could be a powerful tool. Groups were small, local, and dedicated. The Tea Party groups could be fewer than 10 people, but they were highly localized and had dedicated significant personal time and resources. Members communicated with each other frequently and tracked developments in Washington and coordinated advocacy efforts together. Groups were relatively few in number. The Tea Party was not hundreds of thousands of people spending every waking hour focused on advocacy. Rather, the efforts were somewhat modest. Only 1 to 5 self-identified Tea Partiers contributed money or attended events. On any given day in 2009 or 2010, only 20 local events, meetings, trainings, town halls, etc. were scheduled nationwide. In short, a relatively small number of groups were having a big impact on the national debate. The Tea Party focused on saying no to members of Congress. While the Tea Party activists were united by a core set of shared beliefs, they actively avoided developing their own policy agenda. Instead, they had a clarity of purpose. United in opposition to President Obama, they didn't accept concessions and treated weak Republicans as traitors. They were focused on defense, not offense. They weren't interested in policy development. The Tea Partiers primarily applied this defensive strategy by pursuing their own local members of Congress. This meant demanding that their own representatives and senators be their voice of opposition on Capitol Hill. At a tactical level, the Tea Party had several replicable practices, including showing up at members of Congress's town hall meetings and demanding answers, showing up at members of Congress's offices and demanding meetings, and coordinating blanket calling of congressional offices at key moments. The Tea Party, this relatively small group of people, changed votes and defeated legislation. They radically slowed federal government policymaking. They forced Republicans to reject compromise. They shaped national debate over President Obama's agenda, and they paved the way for the Republican takeover in 2010 and Donald Trump today. Those were real, tangible results by the group that represented only a small portion of Americans. Now, what they also did that we will not do is they ignored the reality and made up their own facts. They threatened anyone they considered an enemy. They physically assaulted and spat on staff. They shouted obscenities and burnt people at effigy. And they targeted their hate not just on Congress, but on their fellow citizens, especially people of color. We are better than this. We are the majority, and we don't need petty scare tactics to win. While Donald Trump and the Republicans are in control of the government, they are still politicians that care more about getting elected than they care about any specific issue. I'm going to give you their rundown of how advocacy works, and they go into much more detail in the individual chapters. And As I said, I highly recommend you read it for yourself. Grassroots advocacy works with a local strategy targeting individual members of Congress. In chapter two, you learn how your member of Congress thinks, which is re-election, re-election, and re-election, and how to use that to save democracy. Members of Congress want their constituents to think well of them, and they want to do good with local press. They hate surprises, they hate wasted time, and most of all, they hate bad press. That makes them look weak, unlikable, and vulnerable. In chapter three, you'll identify or organize your local group. They also have on their website, as I mentioned last week, you go in, you type on your zip code, and you can see if there's already an indivisible group near you that you can join. You might as well just join one that's already there instead of reinventing the wheel. Times move it. Okay, in chapter four, you will learn more about the four local advocacy tactics that actually work. Most people have three members of Congress, two senators, and one representative. Whether you like it or not, they are your voices in Washington. Town halls make them listen to you. Everything you do, whether it's a protest, whether it's going to their office, whether it's emailing or calling and getting a response, record it, Facebook it, tweet it, go to the press about it. Every single thing you do. The last thing your member of Congress wants is it the word getting back about them that they weren't cooperating, or vice versa. They want to have cooperated and get positive feedback about it. Okay. Non-town hall events, which would be, say, cutting ribbons or kissing babies back home. Don't let them get photo ops without questions about racism, authoritarianism, or corruption. And then there's district office sit-ins and meetings. Every member of Congress has one or more district offices. Go there, demand a meeting with the member of Congress, and report to the world if they refuse to listen. And four, coordinate calls. Calls are light lift, but you can have an impact. My Facebook page, which is facebook.com/kvoiceofresistance, you'll be able to find some of the links to figure out who your member of Congress is, how you can find their local office, etc. Don't get discouraged. Don't get discouraged at our losses. We are going to lose, and we are going to lose a lot. Van Jones, the activist, says, "We are going to lose every major battle over the next 6 to 18 months. We are going to get beat, but the beatings are going to be galvanizing instead of demoralizing." And it's true. Every time they knock us down, get angry, get back on your feet, and yell even louder. Thank you for listening to this show. Thank you for being a part of the resistance. And thank you for working for a better tomorrow. You can find this show, as well as other great programming, on the Crab Diving Network, that's crabdiving.com, or you can listen to it as a podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or whatever your preferred listening platform is. Be sure to check out Ryan and Patrick's show. Patrick and Ryan spend 2 hours, 5 days a week from 2 to 4, discussing the news. They're funny and they're angry, and it's a great way to filter your news. All right, until next time, thank you for being a part of the resistance. I am Kelly the Voice. Nick and Gabe will play us out. Resist.
It was a dark day back in 011, like none I'd ever seen. Oh, why didn't I have just one more gun that day in Bowling Green? I gazed across those lollipop fields to the unicorn machine. When I saw the lie my enemy wields against our lovely Bowling Green. Oh.